A sloth, a donkey, and a curious human. Send a prompt and see what they're doing. One hits a record with a question on his mind. Two brothers pick it up, see what they find. Corn takes his time, Herman's got the facts. Back and forth, they never hold back. My weird prompts, come on in, that's where we begin. My weird prompts, glad you're here.
This episode was generated using artificial intelligence. Please verify facts.
Daniel sent us this one. He's been deep in the weeds of inventory management, and before he discovered industrial paint markers, he went through a whole journey with barcodes, then NFC tags, specifically the NTAG213. He bought them by the hundred, found them surprisingly cheap, but they just wouldn't stick to fabric. They'd peel right off. And he's asking us to unpack three things. What's the actual difference between NFC and the RFID you see in warehouses? What hardware do you need if you want to go the RFID route? And is there any real answer to the durability problem? Which, honestly, that third question is the one that keeps people up at night.
It really is. And I think the core thing to get straight right from the jump, because this is where most procurement mistakes happen, is that NFC and RFID are not two completely separate technologies. NFC is a subset of RFID. It's one specific flavor of it. NFC operates at 13.56 MHz. It's what's called high-frequency RFID, and it was deliberately designed to have a very short read range. We're talking about 4 centimeters, give or take. That's a feature, not a bug. It's for security. You don't want someone reading your credit card from across the room.
So when people say we switch from NFC to RFID, what they actually mean is they switch from high-frequency NFC to ultra-high-frequency RFID. That's the stuff operating between 860 and 960 megahertz, and the read range on passive tags can hit 12 meters. 12 meters versus 4 centimeters. That's not an incremental difference. That's a completely different category of thing.
And the NTAG213 that Daniel mentioned, that's a specific NFC chip from NXP. It's got 144 bytes of user memory, runs at 13.56 MHz, and it's everywhere. You can buy them for about 7 to 10 cents each in bulk now as of early 2026. They're incredibly cheap. But the antenna is etched aluminum on a thin PET substrate, and the whole thing is designed to be stuck on rigid flat surfaces in free air. A product box, a shelf label, a plastic card. The moment you put it on fabric, two things go wrong. First, the adhesive fails. Second, the antenna detunes.
Let's do the adhesive first, because I think that's the one people actually see. You stick a tag on a tote bag. It looks fine. You come back a week later, and it's curled up on the floor. What's happening there?
Standard NFC tags use a basic acrylic adhesive. Acrylic adhesives are fine for paper and cardboard and clean plastic, but fabric, especially polyester fabric, has very low surface energy. The adhesive can't wet out properly. It's like trying to stick tape to a non-stick pan. And then you add flexing. It stretches, it crumples, it gets thrown in a wash cycle. Acrylic adhesives lose about 50% of their bond strength above 60 degrees Celsius, which is 140 Fahrenheit. A commercial dryer hits that easily. So you've got a triple failure, poor initial adhesion, mechanical stress from flexing, and thermal degradation.
That's before we even get to the antenna cracking.
The NTAG213 antenna is etched aluminum on PET. Aluminum is brittle. PET is somewhat flexible but not designed for repeated bending. When you flex the tag, which you will because it's on fabric, the aluminum traces develop microfractures. Eventually, the antenna breaks entirely and the tag is dead. It's not just that it fell off. Even if you glued it down permanently, the tag itself would fail from mechanical stress. And then there's the detuning issue. Cotton and polyester have a dielectric constant around 1.5 to 2.0. When you mount an antenna directly on that surface, it changes the resonant frequency of the antenna. The tag was tuned for free air or plastic. On fabric, it's slightly off frequency, which reduces the already tiny 4 centimeter read range even further.
You've got a tag that won't stick, breaks when bent, and can barely be read even when it's working. That's not a technology failure. That's a mismatch.
And this is the thing I want to hammer home because it's the single most important concept in RFID deployment. There is no universal tag. The tag that works beautifully on a cardboard box will be useless on a metal drum. The tag that survives an autoclave will be overkill and over budget for tracking office files. You have to match the tag to the surface.
Which brings us to UHF, RFID, the warehouse workhorse. What makes it different beyond just the frequency?
UHF RFID operates under the ISO 18000-6C standard, also known as EPC Gen 2. The physics are fundamentally different from ON-FC. At 860 to 960 MHz, the wavelength is around 33 centimeters. That allows for far-field coupling. The reader antenna and the tag antenna interact through electromagnetic wave propagation rather than inductive coupling, which is what NFC uses. Inductive coupling is basically two coils talking to each other across a very short distance. Far field is actual radio. That's why UHF can reach 12 meters passive, and with battery-assisted passive tags, you can push past 30 meters.
12 meters passive. So you can walk through a warehouse aisle and scan everything on both sides without stopping.
Without even slowing down. A modern UHF reader like the Impinj R700, released in 2023, can process over 1,000 tag reads per second. It supports up to 32 antennas. You mount 4 antennas at a dock door, and you can read every pallet that passes through at 99.8% accuracy. That's not theoretical. That's real deployment data from 50,000 square foot warehouses.
Because that was the other surprise from Daniel's experience. ENFC tags are cheap now.
The price gap has almost closed. As of Q1 2026, basic UHF passive wet inlays, that's the raw tag before any packaging or adhesive backing, are running 8 to 15 cents each in quantities of 500 plus. ENF, CNTAG 213s in similar bulk are 7 to 10 cents. We're talking about a nickel difference. 2 years ago, UHF tags were double the price of ENFC. There's been a chip oversupply that's driven costs down dramatically. Ruggedized UHF tags are more 20 to 50 cents for encapsulated versions, but the basic entry point is now comparable.
If the price is basically the same, why would anyone use NFC for inventory?
For exactly the right use case. If you need item-level identification and you want to use a smartphone to read the tag, every modern phone has an NFC reader built in, but almost no phones have UHF RFID readers. If you're a small shop tracking a few hundred items on rigid shelves, and you want to tap each item with your phone to pull up its record, ONFC is perfect. It's cheap, it's simple, and the short range is actually an advantage. You know exactly which item you're reading. But the moment you need to scan bulk inventory, or you're dealing with fabric or metal, or you want to read through packaging without line of sight, UHF is the only game in town.
We've established that NFC and RFID are cousins, not strangers. But the real question is, why does one peel off your fabric inventory while the other keeps scanning through a pallet wrap? Let's get into the physics of why tags fail.
The adhesion story for UHF RFID tags designed for fabric is completely different from what you get with an NTAG 213. Industrial RFID tag manufacturers actually think about this. Instead of a standard acrylic, they'll use a rubber-based adhesive like 3M300 LSE. LSE stands for low surface energy. It's formulated specifically to bond to difficult surfaces like polypropylene, polyethylene, powder-coated metal, and fabric. The adhesive itself is thicker and has more give. It can flex with the material instead of delaminating. And for the most demanding applications, you skip adhesive entirely and go to heat-bondable tags. These have a thermoplastic backing that literally fuses into the fabric fibers when you apply heat and pressure. It's not glue. It becomes part of the garment.
Like a patch that melts in.
And then you've got silicone encapsulated tags. These are UHF inlays completely sealed inside a flexible silicone housing. The silicone handles the flexing, it's chemically resistant, and it survives wash cycles. There's a real-world case study from a textile rental company. They handle work uniforms, thousands of them. They initially tried NFC tags. Within 3 wash cycles, they had a 40% failure rate. They switched to UHF RFID tags with silicone encapsulation, and after 50 wash cycles, the failure rate was under 2%.
That's the difference between a technology demo and an industrial solution.
It's not just wash cycles. Silicone encapsulated tags can handle autoclave sterilization. The Xerify XS series, for example, those are IP68 rated, they can withstand 200 degrees Celsius for 30 minutes. You can put them on surgical instruments and run them through a steam autoclave. Try that with an NTAG-213 and you'll have a small puddle of melted PET.
Of course there are. Surgical instrument RFID tags. I don't know why I'm surprised anymore.
There's a tag for everything, Korn. That's the point. The question isn't, does RFID work? It's which of the 500 commercially available tag designs matches my surface and my environment.
Okay, but let's say you're not a textile rental company. You're someone with a small warehouse, maybe a few thousand items, and you want to move to UHF RFID. What do you actually need to buy? Because tags are one thing, but you can't read them with your phone.
That's the second part of the prompt, and this is where people get sticker shock if they're not prepared. You need three things, tags, a reader, and some kind of software to make sense of the data. The reader is the big ticket item. At the entry level, you've got handheld UHF RFID readers, something like the Zebra MC3390R. That's a ruggedized Android device with a built-in UHF RFID module. It'll set you back somewhere between $500 and $800 for a basic model. You point it at a shelf, pull the trigger, and it reads every tag within range. The read range on a handheld like that is typically 5 to 7 meters, depending on the tag.
On the other end of the spectrum,
the Impinj R700 is kind of the gold standard right now. It's about $1,500 to $2,000 for the reader itself, and then you need antennas. Typically 4 per reader at a dock door or conveyor belt, and those run $50 to $200 each depending on the type. A full 4 antenna portal setup at a loading dock might cost $4,000 to $5,000 by the time you factor in cables, mounting hardware, and installation.
That's real money. But for a warehouse shipping thousands of items a day, it pays for itself in labor and error reduction pretty quickly.
The labor savings alone. Instead of someone standing there with a barcode scanner, picking up each item, finding the barcode, lining it up, scanning, with RFID, you just push the pallet through the portal and everything is captured in under a second. 200 items per second, non-line of sight, through cardboard. It's not even the same activity.
For the hobbyist or the really small operation,
there are options. You can get an M5 stack RFID module for around $40, pair it with a Raspberry Pi or an ESP32, and build a basic UHF reader setup for under $100. The read range won't be amazing, maybe a meter or two, but for a small workshop tracking a few hundred items, it's totally viable. There's also the SparkFun Simultaneous RFID Reader, which is an all-in-one UHF module with an integrated antenna for about $200. It connects over USB or serial, and you can write Python scripts to handle the tag data. It's not enterprise-grade, but it works.
The entry point can be a couple $100 for a hobby setup, or a few thousand for something you'd actually trust in a business. That's not wildly different from the cost of a decent barcode system, honestly.
No, and when you factor in the labor difference, RFID usually wins on total cost of ownership within the first year. The tags cost about the same as good barcode labels now, and you never have to line up a scanner. The ROI is in the scanning time.
Now that we understand the failure modes, the obvious next question is, what do you actually need to buy to make RFID work in your warehouse? And spoiler, it's not just tags.
The antenna choice is something people consistently overlook. There are two main types for UHF RFID, circularly polarized and linearly polarized. Circularly polarized antennas send out a rotating field, which means the tag orientation doesn't matter much. You can stick the tag on at any angle and it'll still read. That's what you want for general warehouse use. Dock doors, conveyor belts, anywhere the tag orientation is unpredictable. Linearly polarized antennas have a fixed field orientation and they get better read range and better penetration in dense tag populations, but the tags need to be aligned with the field. You'd use those for item level reading on shelves where you can control how the tags are positioned.
Then there's middleware.
The reader spits out raw EPC codes, electronic product codes. That's just a string of numbers. You need software to associate those codes with actual inventory records, track movement, trigger alerts, all of that. For enterprise deployments, you've got platforms like Impinj ItemSense. For smaller setups, there are open source options. Terso is one. You can also just write a Python script that listens on a serial port and pushes tag reads into a database. It's not that complicated at the protocol level. The EPC Gen 2 protocol is well documented.
The hardware stack is tags matched to your surface, a reader. handheld or fixed, with the right antennas and some software to make sense of the data. That's the minimum viable RFID setup.
I'd say the minimum viable test is a handheld UHF reader for $500 to $800, 1,000 tags matched to your specific inventory surfaces for about $100 to $150, and an afternoon of testing. Walk around your actual warehouse. Scan your actual products on your actual shelves. The read range will vary wildly depending on what the tag is mounted on, and you won't know until you test.
Which brings us to the durability question. Is there a tag that survives everything?
And anyone who tells you otherwise is selling something. But you can get close if you understand the failure modes and match the tag accordingly. Let me break this into three tiers. Standard wet inlay with an overlaminate. This is your basic UHF tag, the chip and antenna on a PET substrate, with a thin plastic overlaminate for protection. It's typically IP67 rated, which means it's dust tight and can handle temporary immersion in water. Good for dry indoor environments. Cardboard boxes, plastic bins, office files. Cost, 8 to 15 cents. Works on non-metallic, non-fabric surfaces. This covers maybe 60% of warehouse use cases. These are the silicone jacketed ones I mentioned earlier. IP68 rated, fully submersible, handles high pressure washdowns, survives autoclaving. The Xerify XS series, the Confidex Ironside, the Omni ID Exo series. These are built for harsh environments, food processing, healthcare, outdoor storage, textile rental. They cost 20 to 50 cents each. The antenna is completely sealed, so flexing and moisture don't affect it. These are what you use when Tier 1 fails.
Tier 3 is the weird stuff.
Metal mount tags. This is where the physics gets interesting. If you stick a standard UHF tag directly on a metal surface, the metal acts as a ground plane and detunes the antenna. Read range drops from meters to centimeters. Metal mount tags solve this with a foam or air spacer between the antenna and the metal surface. The spacer creates a quarter wavelength gap that isolates the antenna from the ground plane effect. The Confidex Survivor is a popular one. It's about 45 cents, and on a steel drum, it'll read at 2.5 meters. A standard Avery Dennison AD-236 R6 tag, 9 cents, on that same drum gets you about 0.3 meters. Same reader, same position, 9 times the range difference.
For metal shelving, metal drums, metal equipment, you need metal mount tags specifically.
For liquids, same problem. Water absorbs UHF energy. Tags on bottles of liquid need a spacer too, or you need to position the tag in the air gap above the liquid. There are tags specifically designed for this. The SmartTrack short dipole, for example, is tuned to work on surfaces with high dielectric constants like water bottles and human bodies. RFID tags on runners.
I'm learning that RFID is less a technology and more a taxonomy of edge cases.
That's exactly what it is. And the edge cases are where all the interesting engineering lives. Let me give you a concrete comparison that I think makes this tangible. Take a standard Avery Dennison AD-236 R6 UHF tag, 9 cents, basic wet inlay. Stick it on a cardboard box. Read range, about 8 meters with a good handheld reader. Same tag on a metal drum, 0.3 meters. Same tag on a plastic bottle of water, maybe 1 meter. Now take a Confidex Survivor metal mount tag, 45 cents, and put it on that same metal drum, 2.5 meters. Same tag on cardboard still works fine, maybe 6 meters because the spacer isn't optimized for free air. The point is, surface material isn't a minor variable. It's the dominant variable.
The decision tree for someone listening is, what's your surface, what's your environment, and what's your read range requirement? Answer those three and the tag choice follows.
The good news is, the RAIN RFID Alliance maintains a database of certified tags with all these specs. You can filter by surface type, by IP rating, by form factor, by frequency range. It's not a guessing game anymore. The information is out there.
Let's talk about the adhesion fix for someone who's already bought 1,000 on FC tags and is staring at a pile of peeled off labels.
I feel this pain. You've got the tags, you've already encoded them, you don't want to throw them away. There are a few things you can try. 1. A secondary adhesive. E6000 is a popular industrial adhesive that bonds well to fabric and flexes with it. It's not pretty, but it works. Put a dab on the back of the tag, press it onto the fabric, let it cure for 24 hours. 2. Fabric patches. You can sew or iron a small fabric patch over the tag, essentially creating a pocket that holds it in place. This protects the tag from flexing and washing. 3. Heat shrink tubing. If the item has a strap or a handle, you can slide the tag into a piece of heat shrink tubing and shrink it down around the strap. Not elegant, but effective.
The sloth approach to engineering.
Honestly, if you're starting fresh, just buy tags with fabric-specific adhesives from the beginning. SmartTrack has a fabric series. Avery Dennison has tags designed for apparel. They cost maybe 2 or 3 cents more per tag than the generic ones, and they actually stay on. The lesson from Daniel's experience isn't that NFC is bad, it's that the InTag 213 on fabric is the wrong tool for the job.
I think that's the through line of this whole conversation. The technology isn't the problem. The matching is the problem. You can't just buy RFID tags any more than you can buy shoes, without knowing the size and what surface you'll be walking on.
And the other thing I want to mention, because this is where a lot of the confusion comes from in procurement, is that NFC short read range is an intentional security feature. ENFC was designed for payment cards, access control, and device pairing. The 4-centimeter range means you have to physically touch the reader, which prevents drive-by skimming. That's brilliant for a credit card. It's terrible for scanning a warehouse shelf without a ladder. But the underlying technology, 13.56 MHz RFID, can actually do more. There's a variant called HF RFID that uses the same frequency but with larger antennas and more power, and it can reach about 30 centimeters. Still not UHF territory, but it's used in library book tracking and pharmaceutical authentication. The point is, NFC is a specific implementation of HF RFID with intentional constraints. Don't confuse the implementation with the frequency band.
When someone says we're using RFID, the first question should be, which RFID?
HF or UHF, passive or active. What tag design? These aren't implementation details, they're the whole thing.
We've covered the hardware and the tags, but the million-dollar question remains. Is there a tag that survives everything? The answer is no, but here's how to get close. You pick your worst-case surface, you pick your worst-case environment, and you spec the tag for that. If your inventory includes metal drums, you spec metal mount tags. If it goes through a wash cycle, you spec silicone, encapsulated tags. If it sits outdoors in Arizona, use spec tags with high temperature adhesives because acrylic fails above 60 Celsius. You don't optimize for the average item. You optimize for the item that kills tags.
That's exactly the right framing. And it's worth mentioning that the tag is only half the durability equation. The other half is how you attach it. Even the best tag will fail if you stick it on a dirty, oily, or textured surface. Surface preparation matters. Clean the surface. If it's fabric, make sure it's dry and not stretched when you apply the tag. If it's metal, wipe it down with isopropyl alcohol first. These are the things that don't show up in the spec sheet, but determine whether your deployment works or fails.
Like installing a screen protector, the prep is the whole game.
And on curved surfaces, which Daniel mentioned, you need small form factor tags. A standard RFID tag is maybe 50 by 20 millimeters. If you try to stick that on a curved pipe or a narrow tool handle, the edges lift, moisture gets in, and the tag fails. SmartTrack makes a mini-web tag that's 15 millimeters in diameter. It conforms to curved surfaces much better. The trade-off is read range, smaller antenna, less range. But on a curved surface, a small tag that stays on beats a large tag that peels off after a week.
The durability answer is, match the tag to the surface, match the adhesive to the environment, prep the surface, and if you're dealing with fabric or metal, expect to pay an extra 5 to 15 cents per tag for the specialized versions. That's not a tax. That's the cost of it actually working.
If you're doing this at scale, test first. Buy 5 different tag designs, stick them on your actual inventory, and check them after a week, a month, a wash cycle, a temperature cycle. The tag that survives your specific environment is the right tag. The spec sheet is a starting point, not a guarantee.
Let's pull this together into something actionable. If you're standing in front of a warehouse full of stuff and you want to track it, here's the decision tree. Step 1. Can you touch each item individually when you scan? If yes, and your surfaces are rigid and non-metallic, NFC with a smartphone might be fine. It's cheap, it's simple, and you probably already own the reader. Your phone. Step 2. Do you need to scan in bulk, through packaging, or from a distance? You need UHF RFID. Step 3. What's your worst surface? Metal, fabric, liquid, curved? That determines your tag type. Step 4. What's your environment? Dry indoor, wet washdown, outdoor, high temperature? That determines your encapsulation and adhesive. Step 5. What's your budget for readers? A few hundred for a handheld, a few thousand for a fixed portal. That's it. 5 questions, and you've narrowed down from hundreds of options to maybe 3 or 4.
That's a really clean framework. And I'd add, if you're coming from barcodes, the biggest mindset shift is that RFID is non-line of sight. You don't need to see the tag. You don't need to orient the item. You just need the tag to be within the reader's field. That changes how you design your workflow. Instead of a scanning station where someone handles each item, you have a portal or a handheld wand that captures everything in a single pass. The labor model is completely different.
Which is why warehouses that switch to RFID often see payback in under a year. It's not the tag cost, it's the labor.
The error reduction. Barcode scanning has an error rate around 1 in 100,000 scans, which sounds great, but it's per scan. If you're scanning 10,000 items a day, you're making a mistake every 10 days. RFID, with proper deployment, can push that to 1 in a million or better, because you're not relying on a human to line up the scanner. The reader just captures everything in range.
The real question isn't, should I use NFC or RFID? It's, what am I tracking, where is it, and how much labor am I willing to spend per scan? Answer that, and the technology choice makes itself.
For Daniel's specific case, fabric items, probably tote bags or something similar based on the prompt, the answer is clearly UHF RFID with fabric-specific tags. The NTAG 213 experience he had wasn't a failure of his approach. It was the right instinct. Radio tags are better than barcodes for this, but the wrong frequency and the wrong tag design. ONFC on fabric is a known failure mode. UHF on fabric is a solved problem.
The other thing worth flagging for people thinking about this now, in mid-2026, is that the cost curve is still moving. UHF tag prices have been dropping steadily since the chip oversupply started in 2023, and they're now basically at parity with NFC for basic tags. At some point, and we might already be there, the cost argument for NFC in the inventory management just evaporates. Why would you accept a 4-centimeter read range when you can get 8 meters for the same price?
The only remaining argument is the reader. If you already have smartphones and you don't want to buy UHF hardware, NFC still has a niche. But even that's changing. There are now UHF RFID sleds that clip onto smartphones, the TSL1077 for example, that add UHF reading capability to a phone for about $300. The barriers are dropping.
Which brings me to the forward-looking piece of this. Where is this all going? Because the ISO 18000-63 revision is expected late this year, and that's going to standardize sensor-enabled RFID tags. Temperature logging, humidity sensing, shock detection, all built into the tag and readable with a standard UHF reader.
This is huge. Right now, if you want to know whether a shipment of pharmaceuticals stayed cold during transit, you use a separate temperature logger. With sensor-enabled RFID, the tag itself records the temperature history. You scan the pallet at the receiving dock, and you get not just the inventory data, but the full cold chain record. That transforms RFID from an identification technology into a condition monitoring platform. Every item becomes a data logger.
The tag that tells you where something is also tells you whether it's still good.
And for food, for pharmaceuticals, for sensitive electronics, that's a game changer. It also opens up new failure modes, of course. A sensor-enabled tag has a battery or a supercapacitor, which means it has a shelf life. But the industry is working on energy harvesting designs that scavenge power from the reader's signal itself. The first generation of these is already in testing.
On the other side of the spectrum, you've got Bluetooth BLE tags, like AirTags. Those are $20 to $30 each, but they give you real-time location tracking over 30-plus meters. Are those going to eat into RFID's territory for high-value items?
For high-value individual items, absolutely. If you're tracking a piece of capital equipment worth $50,000, a $25 AirTag is noise. But for bulk inventory, tens of thousands of items, BLE doesn't scale economically. The silicon for BLE is more complex than a passive UHF tag, which is basically just an antenna and a tiny chip with no battery. You're never going to get a passive BLE tag down to 8 cents. The physics doesn't allow it. So RFID owns the bulk market and BLE owns the high-value single-item market. They'll coexist.
Which is a good note to end the technical discussion on. The landscape isn't NFC versus RFID versus BLE. It's a toolkit, and you pick the tool for the job.
If you take nothing else from this episode, test on your actual inventory. The spec sheet is theory. Your warehouse is reality.
Now, Hilbert's daily fun fact.
In 1985, a Soviet botanist on Sakhalin Island published a field journal documenting the Drosera sakhalinensis, a sundew species whose tentacles curl inward at speeds approaching 1 millimeter per second, unusually fast for the genus. The manuscript includes a hand-drawn margin note in red ink that reads, and I quote, "The plant appears impatient."
Impatient carnivorous plants. That's a new category of unsettling.
The plant appears impatient. I'm going to think about that for the rest of the day.
This has been My Weird Prompts, thanks to our producer Hilbert Flumingtop. If you found this useful, subscribe wherever you get your podcasts. We're on Spotify, Apple Podcasts, and at My Weird Prompts. We'll be back next week with something completely different.
Probably not carnivorous plants, but you never know.
This episode's script was written by DeepSeek V4 Pro, with text-to-speech by Chatterbox.
Thanks for listening to our show, My Weird Prompts, where odd thoughts go. From sloth slow takes to facts on cue, we chase the strange and follow through. Some nights it's news, some nights it's lore, a thought you've never heard before. The hosts dig in, the hosts dig deep. The stranger the prompt, the less they sleep. From tiny questions, big ones too. From half-formed hunches to deja vu. If something odd is in your head, send it in, we'll chase the thread. My weird prompts, that's the close. From sloth, from man, from long-eared host. My weird prompts, until next time. Stay curious, keep weird in mind.